You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show whenever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Today's episode is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. That's RockAuto.com. The Miami Heat faced the Milwaukee Bucks on Thursday afternoon, and I'll recap the game, give you my key takeaways, and talk about whether Bam Adebayo is really a Giannis stopper on defense. But the Bucks were always going to be a tough challenge for Miami no matter what. They had just lost to the Nets 2 days before. They needed only one win to clinch the top seed in the East, and Miami was without both Jimmy Butler, who missed the previous game against the Celtics with a sore ankle, and Goran Dragic, who had twisted his ankle in the waning moments of that win over Boston. And that's the story of the game, because for almost 30 minutes, none of that seemed to matter. The Heat looked absolutely dominant for the first half and part of the third quarter. They were sharing the ball, they were knocking down shots, and playing some incredible defense even without Butler, their best defender, arguably. They scored 73 points in the first half, which Milwaukee had actually given up 73 points to the Nets as well, but that's a whole other story. I think a lot of Milwaukee's defensive issues might be somewhat by design. They are a very good team. They are a very good defensive team, and they were able to turn up their defensive intensity in the second half. But Miami in the first half shot 54%, 13-24 on all of their three-point attempts, and they assisted on 19 of 22 made field goals. And so they were actually, as I said, sharing the ball incredibly well and shooting very, very well as well. This was the best version of the team, and that they did so without Jimmy, and their best scorer off the bench in Goran was remarkable. They were up 17 to finish the half, and they had actually built a 23-point lead. It was the biggest of their game. But in the third quarter, as I mentioned before, things just kind of seemed to fall apart. Bam Adebayo got into foul trouble. He got a little bit more conservative with his defensive tenacity. And they hit just 8 of 22 three-pointers as Milwaukee's defense tightened up. And without Butler to slow the pace and force his way to the line, Miami just couldn't stop the bleeding. Milwaukee got whatever they wanted. And in fact, they closed the game with 5 minutes to go on a 20-0 run on their way to a 130-116 win over the Heat. So it's hard to be disappointed in it. I think you don't ever want to say, well, such and such player was injured, and maybe you don't ever want to pin all of your hopes on needing one player, even a player as good as Jimmy Butler. I could say that Miami without Jimmy Butler is probably better than Milwaukee without Giannis Antetokounmpo. And that's no knock, perhaps, on the roster or anything else. I think Giannis is such a singular impact player, the way he takes the ball up, the way he controls things. And Milwaukee's just, without him, they have some very solid role players, and even a star-level player in Chris Middleton, who did have a very, very good game. But I think Miami's team approach, the way they share the ball, the way they do everything so well, they don't need Jimmy as much. They do need him, and that was clearly a factor there. He was missing pretty substantially because they can't stop Milwaukee. The plan might be to let Giannis do whatever he wants, but the plan doesn't work if you let Middleton go off for 33 points, which is what he did. And so without Butler to be a switchable defender, a guy who can take up a number of players, you're missing a key cog in that wall that you'd like to theoretically build around Giannis. Crowder did an admirable job. Guys like Kelly Olynyk, who were in the starting lineup, did a pretty solid job as well. I should mention that the starting lineup was the same as it was against the Celtics without Jimmy Butler. Olynyk, Adebayo, Crowder, Nunn, and Robinson. They did a very good job overall. Again, they did a really solid job of trying to limit what Giannis could do. They gave up some easy points to Middleton. He seemed like he was pretty engaged throughout the game, whereas Antetokounmpo kind of picked it up very, very late in the second half in particular. Maybe when Giannis picked up foul trouble, you want to attribute it to that, but it's kind of a chicken or egg argument, something I'll talk about a little bit later in the second segment when I talk about Giannis and Bam's defense of him particularly. But Giannis forced Bam into foul trouble, but Bam was also a little more passive once he did get into foul trouble. So you can look at the final score stat line from Antetokounmpo and you can say, well, maybe he dominated over Adebayo. But actually, we'll debunk that theory in the second segment. They also, as far as the Heat are concerned, lived by the three-point attempt. And that was a little too evident because without Butler again getting to the line, slowing the pace, kind of taking over things and staunching the flow on offense for Milwaukee. You know, Milwaukee could just continue to pick up the pace. They just run it as fast as they want to. They let Adekunpo go in the fast break opportunities or where he can just spin into the lane and he only needs a couple seconds and a couple steps from the from the half court line basically to get to the rim. And so, you know, that 3-point offense works so well for Miami. But whereas it's a significant weapon for the Heat, you also need some other things there. You need to be able to mix that up with some occasional drives to the rim, or in Jimmy's case, occasional stepping up to the line and being able to slow the game down, control the pace a little bit, and turn it in your favor. And without Butler there, they just didn't have anybody to do that. Against the Celtics, Adebayo, again, who shot a career-high 18 free throw attempts, was absolutely able to fill that gap in for Butler, but he wasn't as effective against the Bucks. Three players had their best games of the bubble. Andre Iguodala was phenomenal. He continues to be a supremely impactful player, showing versatility, showing a little athleticism. It seems like that whatever rust he may have had when he first joined the Heat has been completely shaken off. He's kind of ramped himself up, and maybe this is just playoff Andre. I've talked a little bit before about like the kind of annual rhythms that players get into, and for Andre, he's kind of in the midst here of what would probably be just after a finals run, considering what he's been able to accomplish over the last few years of his career as a member of the Warriors. And so he's peaking at just the right time. He had he was a team high plus 18, and he also finished with 12.7 rebounds and 8 assists. He just seems to know what to do. He finds cutters. He's making the right play, and he was a pretty solid defender on Adekunpo as well, forcing a couple of turnovers. But Derek Jones Jr. also had his best game of the bubble. He finished with 12 points, knocked down 2 of 3 three-point attempts, got to the line 4 times, finished with 4 rebounds. Not as impactful defensively. We were hoping that maybe Jones might be able to limit Adekunpo a little bit, but that was not the case. And I have to say, Kendrick Nunn also bounced back a little bit as well. Finished with 14 points from the field, 5 of 7, 4 of 10 from 3-point line. So his defense wasn't perhaps as egregious as it's been in the past, but his offense was a little bit more consistent. Maybe we've seen from them before, all it takes is one good game, or at least in this case, a slightly decent game for him to kind of turn it around and go on a couple of games where maybe he knocks down 20-something points or something like that. So hopefully this will be the start of a more productive stretch for Kendrick as they gear up for the last 4 games of the seeding in the bubble. 3 takeaways from the game. Duncan Robinson continues to have an incredible impact. It wasn't even about his scoring now, although he did have a solid game with 21 points, 5 of 9 from the line, and 7 of 11 from the field. But he's just mixing up a little bit now where he doesn't feel the need to just shoot from the perimeter. Not only does he have that one dribble three-pointer that's such an incredible weapon for him, and you should totally check out Michael Pina's work from The Ringer. He wrote about the advent of the one dribble three-pointer, and of course Robinson uses it pretty well when he tries to elude a defender, but he's got such a great chemistry with Adebayo on dribble handoffs. Very, very effective. And he's been getting to the line a little bit more and getting to the rim. He understands that there are seams in the defense now that he's being guarded so closely, and he's exploiting those really well. Kelly Olynyk regressed a little bit as a shooter, but he still took 8 free throw attempts and added 13 points overall. And he also took a charge to force a Giannis turnover. I keep liking what Olynyk does. Maybe I've just been waiting for Kelly to have a more consistent stretch here. And while his shooting took a dip, he just was still a pretty solid player. He placed in good defense. He also had some nice shooting and some good pass work as always. And he just continues to be a playmaker as a big, which is why I think he's getting significant playing time over Myers Leonard, who continues to be out of the lineup. Solomon Hill even got some playing time over Myers today. Solomon finished with a 3-pointer, finished with a steal. Had some nice defensive plays. He's another wing who can, you know, kind of be a solid defender, and he showed it today. I think Hill gets a lot of grief for being Solomon Hill, a guy on the end of the bench and things of that sort, but he's a solid role player, and I think he could be a nice addition to Miami moving forward. I like his presence on the team, to be honest with you, but in any case, I'll go through what Bam Adebayo did to limit Giannis Antetokounmpo, whether or not he is in fact a Giannis stopper, and I'll go through the good, the bad, and the ugly right before I continue my takeaways from tonight's game. But I did want to also talk to you about rockauto.com. If you're like me, you probably don't want to go to an auto parts store. It's hard to find the right parts. You always feel like you're getting screwed over. You might not know exactly what you're getting. You're at the mercy of people behind the counter. Rockauto.com is a family business that's been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. That's two decades of work, and it's so easy to use. You just enter the car, the parts that you're looking for. You'll find the best prices available. You pick them, you have them delivered to your door within a couple of days, and you save yourself hundreds of dollars, something that we could all use, especially during these particular times. It's just great. Whatever parts you might be looking for your car or your truck, from tail lamps or motor oil, even new rugs, you can find it all on rockauto.com. It's a unique and easy to navigate website. Again, you see all the parts there, you choose them quickly, and you have them delivered. And best of all, reliably low prices, whether you're a professional or a do-it-yourselfer. I used it, got parts for my wife's car, had them delivered, saved myself hundreds of dollars. And if you go to rockauto.com right now and you go to the section that says, how did you hear about this? Just write "locked on" and they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. That's rockauto.com. Remember that I'll be recapping every game in the Orlando bubble, so make sure you subscribe on your favorite app to listen to podcasts. Make sure you always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. So Bam Adebayo as the Giannis stopper, that was kind of the buzz going into the game. I think even without Butler or Goran, you were still hoping to see some shades of what we've noticed over the course of the regular season. Obviously, Miami had knocked off Milwaukee twice during the games before the coronavirus stopped the NBA during the mid-March, but before that, we had seen enough of Bam and what he was able to do on Giannis, and I think a lot of that was kind of building up before the game, aided if for nothing else. And I tweeted this out last night, so maybe you should definitely check it out if you haven't, but go to The Ringer as well. Kevin O'Connor made a nice little video there about what makes Bam such an effective Giannis stopper and had some nice highlights there. He also pointed out something pretty impressive, which is that Bam has actually limited Adetokounmpo more effectively than any other defensive player. He's actually held Adetokounmpo to 36% shooting And on the times that he's been guarding him. So unlimited possessions there. And he also went into a little bit more about what makes Bam so effective. Kevin has been on a lot of the Zoom calls with Heat, when Heat coaches and players and stuff like that. So he's definitely been asking there. You kind of see that he was working on a story and it was all building up towards this game. Unfortunately, it didn't work out quite the way Miami fans and O'Connor probably expected it to be. I personally thought that Butler was going to be able to play against the Bucks. I was hoping that that Goran was going to be able to bounce back from his ankle injuries. I still think that both of them would have been available if it was, say, a Game 7 type situation. But the fact that it wasn't really all that important, that the seeding is pretty much, well, not much of a factor, kind of erased any need for them to actually play. But a lot was made after the game, too, about whether or not Bam actually managed to stop Giannis. You look at Giannis's final stat line there, and he finished with 33 points. And obviously, it doesn't look like Bam actually was able to limit him. But, I don't like that they were using the immediacy or the recency of that game to kind of point out that Bam is not a good defender. And so I actually went and looked at each of Giannis's 13 made shots. He attempted 17 shots in total. He missed all four of his three-pointers. And he also finished 7 of 9 from his line to contribute to that 33-point total. So of his 13 made field goals, here's a breakdown of what happened. Two of those shots were made on fast break opportunities where there wasn't any one individual defender. Again, Adetokounmpo so effective in the open floor. He just takes a couple steps in from the half-court line. Next thing you know, he's able to get to the rim, whether a little Euro step with those long limbs of his or because he's able to use his speed to get past somebody. Either way, he's very effective in that way. There was also this one possession where it was kind of like a staggered half-court type of set where the defense hadn't been set there. Adetokounmpo was actually able to kind of work his way to the rim. He actually traveled and it wasn't called, so that was another one of those the 13 makes that he had. So that's three so far. One was off of Iguodala after Giannis pushed off of Iggy along the baseline to create a little space. Next thing you know, he got an easier layup. There was another over Kendrick Nunn at the rim that finished with a dunk, I think. Two driving spin moves down the lane. Those were really, really impressive. I'll be honest with you. An incredible spin move, as good as anybody I've ever seen in the NBA. I think the only other players that I can think of off the top of my head that are comparable as far as overall spin moves are Jordan and maybe Kobe Bryant, and that's because Bryant patterned his game so much after what Jordan was able to accomplish. But Giannis, at his size, with that speed and strength, to get to that move and to be able to polish it off whenever he wants is very, very impressive. But anyway, two of those moves were one of them was on Derrick Jones, another one on Jay Crowder. And then his last made field goal was a dunk over Duncan Robinson, and that's how he got to his 33 points. So of that, 18 shots were against Heat teammates, not against Bam Adebayo. Five of them actually came at Bam's expense. Two of them were ISO possessions on Bam, including one particularly nasty move along the baseline where, again, I think he was able to spin past him and was able to drive to the lane. No, or maybe he just took a kind of jab step and then was able to just burst past Bam, where I've rarely seen Bam kind of frozen in place there, but Giannis was actually able to do it. And then there was a 15-foot jumper there, I think, as the shot clock was winding down. Adebayo was on Adetokounmpo, but he was kind of sagging off him a little bit. Knowing that, frankly, Adetokounmpo doesn't have much of a jumper, and he kind of just let it fly from along the baseline there. One rebound putback where Adetokounmpo missed, he grabbed the rebound off a missed shot, and Bam was boxed out, and then he got called for a foul. Bam actually made contact with him, and the shot was good on a putback attempt, and so he got the 3-point opportunity. I'm not sure there was a lot of contact here. That's not the point. Bam actually just gave up the play there a little bit, and so there wasn't much he could do. And then Bam was also the victim on one of Adetokounmpo's patented spin moves, so that was pretty impressive. But, you know, there was also some other statistics there, or some things that didn't necessarily show up as statistics that kind of back up whether or not Bam is, in fact, capable of guarding Giannis particularly well. There was a forced turnover by Bam, something that doesn't really you don't really see who forces turnovers. You know, the Adetokounmpo had 6 total turnovers, and one of them was actually forced by Bam because he was stifled so completely on an individual possession there that he just passed up the ball. And that's where you don't really notice, where you can't really see any statistical evidence of Bam's incredible individual defense. There was another assist that was actually credited to Adetokounmpo, where again, Adetokounmpo was shut down by Adebayo and he was bailed out at the last second as a cutting Pat Connaughton drove down the lane, freeing himself from his defender, I think Duncan Robinson. And so that was, you know, it shows up as nothing. No statistic accredited to Bam, doesn't really show anything other than 10 seconds of really solid defense, but it shows up as an assist for Adetokounmpo and 2 points for Connaughton, and it doesn't really reflect on Duncan other than he gave up the 2 points, quite honestly. So it's pretty simple, I think. Giannis is very good. He's going to get his points, whether from the field or from the line. He gets superstar calls, and he's the MVP, and he's one of the faces of the league. There's no way around that. He's going to get to the line, if nothing else. If his shot isn't falling, which it rarely does, and for whatever reason, defenses are able to stop his incredible blend of athleticism and speed and his ability to get to the rim, which seems very unlikely considering what he's been over the last couple of seasons. I think he's going to get 20-something points per game no matter what. He's going to have a really, really bad game. And I think his worst game of the season came against Miami, where they did exactly that. They built that wall around Adetokounmpo, kept him from getting to the rim, and forced everybody else to put up shots. And, of course, it led to a Miami blowout victory at American Airlines Arena. But Bam is as good as anyone at being able to limit what Adetokounmpo can do. Anybody else gets smoked by that combination of size and speed, and Bam is the only one who comes close at this point. And there's no denying that. I think Joel Embiid is up there as well. You could have made a case for Al Horford from the last couple seasons. I don't think that he's there anymore. And so when you look at Bam and the fact that he's so young and so strong and athletic and quick and mobile and has that kind of lateral foot speed that you need in order to shadow Adetokounmpo, I think he's as good an option as you have of being able to limit Giannis. And that's the whole thing. It's about limiting him. You're not going to stop him. It was a lot like, limiting Michael Jordan back in the day. Nobody ever did that. He was going to get his points. Not to the same level, I think, as Adetokounmpo. I think he's more of a scorer than Giannis is just because of the change in the game and the change in the rules and things of that sort. But as far as where Adetokounmpo does, he's going to get points. Bam does a very, very good job of limiting, but it's also a team-oriented concept. Now, I will point out that it was really, really effective how Adetokounmpo was being guarded in the first half because you saw him getting frustrated. I talked to a Bucks media person, and he mentioned to me that you know, Adetokounmpo does get a little frustrated, and when he does, he tries to take over the game, tries to go 1-on-5, and that led to some sloppy play from him. It led to some forced turnovers. I think that's where that charge that was drawn by Kelly Olynyk took place, because Adetokounmpo was kind of playing blindly, like he was a a seeing red, as they say, about a bull, and he just didn't want to. He couldn't be stopped. He didn't want to be stopped, or he was frustrated at the fact that he actually was being stopped or limited to some degree, and so he tried to take over the game. And especially with his shot, he was being a little wild, erratic from his shooting selection there. He made all 13 of his field goal attempts from within 2 feet, but the fact that he just was taking those long range shots unnecessarily so I think was more indicative of the fact that he was getting a little frustrated and was trying to have an impact. But again, it's a team effort, and without Jimmy there to limit and to form a significant brick in that wall, you're gonna give up some points there. But there's no denying what Bam can do, and so I just wanted to kind of go into it a little bit deeper, because I think it's important to talk about what Adetokounmpo does well. But I'll also get into the good, the bad, and the ugly next. But I'll remind you to start your morning with the news that matters in just 10 minutes. Axios Today host Nyla Boodoo and a team of award-winning journalists will bring you the latest analysis and insight into the trends shaping our world. Reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or at Twitter using the hashtag AskHelloHeat. You can always shoot me an email if you just want to talk about something Heat related. I've been getting a lot of emails from a lot of you, and I appreciate that you just kind of check in after every game and say, oh, well, this is what pointed out to me, or this is what really stood out. I like hearing from you guys, so please make sure to send me something via DM on Twitter or using the hashtag, again, AskHelloHeat. The good, Miami's overall effort. You can't deny that. I mean, it's just an incredible thing for them to be able to step up and be able to challenge a team as good as Milwaukee with that two of their best, most consistent scorers and players. And the fact that they were able to hold their own for a lot of it. Milwaukee's run, their 20-0 spurt towards the end of the game notwithstanding, Miami really held their own. And then eventually it just became too much to kind of just over, just kind of play above your weight class there. They were just, doing everything they could. And with Bam in foul trouble, oh boy, like he just... You can't limit what Adetokounmpo does. I'm sorry, and so without Adebayo getting to the line, his offense too, I'll be honest with you, he did struggle from the field. He was just 2 of 10, a really bad game for him. I think he was just trying to exert himself so much on the defensive end that maybe he wasn't focused on his offense as much as he was. But you kind of just walk away saying, well, you held your own against Milwaukee. And I think a lot of – there were some doom and gloom type tweets after the game. I can't believe we gave up so many points. I can't believe we blew a 23-point lead. All valid points. But you held your own. You did a good job. And I think if there's a takeaway from all this is that Miami can compete with any team in the league. They were without two of their best players. And they still challenged Milwaukee. They still had a full 48 minutes of Giannis Antetokounmpo and Brook Lopez and Chris Middleton and everybody else on that roster. And Miami was able to do a very good job with the exception of the last 5 minutes of the game. You knew they were going to come back. I think Eric Spoelstra has pointed out to me and others on many occasions, with the three-point shot falling the way it does now in today's NBA, any lead is something that you can be erased within seconds. You knock a couple three-pointers and all of a sudden a 14-point lead is down to 1 or 2. That's just the reality of it. And so you can't be so doom and gloom about a bad loss. It wasn't even a bad loss. It looks worse than it actually is. They held their own. And with Jimmy there, I think the complexion of this game changes completely. The bad, however, is that the third seed is probably no longer attainable. It would have to require some incredible falling apart from Boston, which is entirely possible, but very, very unlikely. They would have to probably lose out the rest of their games. I think the magic number now is 1, either a win from, or it might have been 2, 2 or 1, I'm sorry. They either have to win a game or win a game and have Miami lose a game, but I think it's just 1. And if that's the case, Miami's bound to lose one of their next 4 games, and Boston's bound to win 1. And so there's no chance that Miami can close that gap. And I don't know that it matters. If they're the third seed, who will they face? Philadelphia? It looks at this point like Indiana is going to be able to hang on to the 5th seed. And if that's the case, then Miami's due for a 4-5 matchup against Indiana, which probably behooves them. I think you're fighting for the third seed if you think that Indiana will drop. And while Indiana's rolled to a couple games and Miami does play them twice over the next few weeks, you know, I think ultimately there's still it's a better matchup for Miami to go up against the Pacers, I'd have to say. You know, T.J. Warren's playing very well, but you're without Domas Sabonis. Who knows if he comes back at close to full strength? I wouldn't guess that he does. Victor Oladipo's playing okay. And look, you got to give Indiana credit. They always play well. They always are smart. They always challenge teams, and they always find a way to win, even if their talent level isn't all that great. So you tip their hat to them, and they're going to be a tough out if you face them in the first round. But you're not playing for home court advantage. There's no added benefit there. They tune out all the crowd noise. They don't care about the virtual fans that are in attendance. And I mean, not about them personally, but they're not even looking at that. And I keep reiterating that point because I don't think it matters whether or not you're the third seed, the second seed, or anything else. This team can understands that. I think with Jimmy Butler and Udonis Haslem and Andre Iguodala and all the other experience there, it doesn't matter who has home court advantage or whatever. You have to win on the road anyway if this was a regular, normal playoff scenario. And so against any team, you'll have to find a way to win. And I think they can compete against the Celtics. I think they can compete against the Raptors. We've seen that pretty clearly. And I think they can challenge Milwaukee. Everybody else, maybe Philadelphia could be a challenge as well, but they seem to be a little bit discombobulated, at least from a chemistry standpoint. The ugly of this, as far as a takeaway is concerned, is the inevitability of injury as an X factor, is that you never know what could happen. As I mentioned before, I think Jimmy and Goran would have played if they had to, but you're going to see something happen here. Something is going to crop up, unfortunately. It's too close, too compressed, and I think that's a good word for it, a schedule for the Heat. Is if you have practice every day or you're playing a game, you had a back-to-back already, you know, they're going to have their fifth game in almost a week. Was it? I mean, it seems unbelievable to think of that kind of schedule, and yet here we are. They had their first game last Saturday against the Denver Nuggets, and they played two games back-to-back on Monday and Tuesday. They played another game against Milwaukee on Thursday, and then they play their game against the Suns on Saturday. So within 8 days, five games. That's a pretty hectic schedule there. And so especially after a four-month layoff, I think it's going to be very difficult. And look, I'll have to say this about the Suns. They look pretty impressive. They're having a lot of fun, and Devin Booker's playing really well. If Jimmy's not able to come back there, you might want to pencil in a loss there. So that's something to look out for. But either way, the injury factor is going to be a factor for not just Miami, but for every team. You already see Sabonis missing time. You see the Lakers going through it. Every team has faced an injury or will continue to face the possibility of an injury cropping up. I hate to point out the Memphis Grizzlies and losing, you know, Jaren Jackson Jr. You know, the Orlando Magic had a scare with Aaron Gordon. I'm sorry, I forgot to point out Ben Simmons, you know, suffering a knee injury as well. So who knows what happens. Right now, though, I think you can find comfort in the fact that Miami played a really well game. They looked intact. They looked like they had a good understanding of their roles. They did everything very, very well, and that they had a last-minute collapse or close to a last-minute collapse doesn't erase that they played very, very well for almost 35, 40 minutes. And so that's the big takeaway from that. Enjoy it, even though it was a loss. And ultimately, none of it matters because you were still able to build confidence. And I think those things matter, is that everybody got some playing time. Tyler Hero continues to step up. Derrick Jones Jr. getting a boost. Kendrick Nunn getting a boost, etc. All those guys are just reminded of the fact that they're contributors and they play. I think Eric Spoelstra always does a good job of just keeping everybody engaged and letting them know that they'll be counted on at some point or another, especially with injuries being more of a factor than ever before. But anyway, thanks for always listening. Make sure you tune in later on this week when I do have a recap of that win over the Suns. That's I'm calling my shot right now. Be sure to subscribe and follow this podcast to get the latest episode of Locked On Heat as soon as it's out. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your support.
Yeah! Wrap it up, Dean.